Professors FM.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Fanalytics Podcast. Welcome to 2024. Doug, college bowl season. I guess it's still got a little bit more to go, but it's coming to the end. Now, you know, there's a topic I'm going to bring up today that you're going to get a little scared by. So I can't decide if I'm going to do it at the beginning or at the end. You know, it's going to be at the end. Okay, so okay. A little bit of a preview. Doug, this college bowl season has been sort of perfect for me. And I haven't done any external media throughout the whole thing. But this has been sports meets marketing meets mascots. And to me, the winner of the 2023-2024 college bowl season is, I don't know, you like need that kind of, what they call it?
Drum roll, please.
You know, where they sort of need.
Yeah, Foley, yeah.
Has been the Kellogg's company.
I didn't connect the dots that there was a common denominator between some of these mascot showings we've seen.
You didn't?
Kellogg's is the brains behind this, the genius behind the bowl season.
You know, I've got too many windows open, sort of bad preparation for the podcast. But I had the list of bowls somewhere. I had it somewhere here. Oh, here it is.
I can name them just based off of the mascots.
Well, you know, when I was going through it, and you know, there was actually a Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
I missed that one.
I think that's the real tell. Kellogg's coming heavy to this mission, right? I mean, that was Notre Dame versus Oregon State and the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. But, you know, that's where you know, oh, the Kellogg's company has arrived. They've put – and for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, Kellogg's is the owner of Cheez-It and Pop-Tarts.
The two big hitters in bowl season.
Well, and it makes me wonder, was there something that went down at the Tony the Tiger Bowl that we don't even know about?
Yeah, I feel like we would have heard about it because of the way social media works, because I wasn't watching the Cheez-Its Bowl or the Pop-Tarts Bowl either way, and it's all I saw on my feed for a good week there. So
okay, now I think you were a bigger fan of what Pop-Tarts did than I was, so yes. Really present what Pop-Tarts did.
So the mascot was a human Pop-Tart, a life-sized 6 foot tall Pop-Tart walking around, dancing during the game. That's what the referees,
like
I think you might have spanked.
Obvious?
Say what?
Was the flavor obvious? No.
I don't even remember the flavor. And so anyway, he caused quite a scene during the game. Definitely got some people's attention. But after the game, when the winning team was presented the trophy, they put the Pop-Tart man.
Okay, timeout.
Okay.
Who won the game? Who were the teams?
Was this one Kansas State? I think it was Kansas State.
What a perfect answer. Like, doesn't even Pop-Tart. It was the Pop-Tart guy that won the
game. No, yeah, it could have been SMU. It could have been North Dakota State. Like, I could have cared less.
Kansas State 28, North Carolina State 19.
Okay, so I remembered it.
The Camping World Stadium in Orlando, Florida.
The iconic Camping World Stadium. One of the landmark stadiums in college football. I haven't heard of before. But yeah, so he goes up, and it was kind of a Han Solo maneuver. Well, you know, in Han in episode 5, when he goes down and is turned into carbonite, you know, he's frozen. Except the Pop-Tart was going into a giant toaster. And then out of the toaster came an edible Pop-Tart, which was the sort of bowl trophy for Kansas State to devour. And that they did. Although I will say my critique was that they only ate the icing, the actual, like, I don't know what to call it, like cookie was left unscathed, but the icing was devoured by a team of Kansas State players. And what some would 2 years ago probably point out as a super spreader event.
Okay. So does that mean the Pop-Tart mascot is no longer with us?
He is with those Kansas State players forever.
Okay, so is there
a... I think that's... I think that's how it works.
Okay. As a Pop-Tart fan, is there a continuity problem if that mascot shows up next year?
Well, I think we know his fate ahead of time next year, so it's not as thrilling. But watching the mascot go into a toaster and then come out not alive anymore and then be eaten by the team was an all-time bowl moment. It reminded me of, you know, there's all this talk over the last couple weeks about these bowl games not mattering anymore outside of the playoff. It certainly feels that way as a fan. It feels like an exhibition. I've heard people liken it to the spring game. Man, there's some silliness in bowl season that is unique to college football and okay. That reminds you these are kids playing a game for their school. This is a lot of fun. Let's not take it too seriously. Let's eat a human Pop-Tart.
Okay, but now, okay, so this is beautiful marketing, right? Because somehow the Kellogg's company is supporting these exhibition games. And usually, I don't know, usually you see marketing and as a consumer, okay, so Doug, you know, you're on YouTube and you want to watch a video, a 30-second video, and YouTube makes you watch a 15-second ad for, you know, probably Progressive Insurance or Nationwide Insurance.
Yeah, and I don't want to watch it.
And you hate those companies.
Yeah, exactly.
You hate
them. I'm less likely to buy after seeing the ad, yeah.
Marketer, Here, you just said the best moment of the bowl season was brought to us by Pop-Tarts.
I think it was. It's that Super Bowl magic of the brands actually have a chance to create a real connection with the fans in a way that the fans enjoy and find part of the entertainment. It was part of the entertainment for this. Unlike when I'm watching YouTube and it is not part of the entertainment, it is something that takes away from the entertainment that they actually, you know, you can pay on YouTube to not watch ads. So they're kind of admitting that, hey, this is lessening your experience. You can pay to avoid it. With the Pop-Tart Bowl, nobody is paying to avoid the branding because the branding is it might be the highlight of, like I said, of the bowl season. It's what we came to see. And it's adding so much entertainment value to that sport, whereas the game could have been the Georgia-Florida State game. It could have been a blowout. But, you know, it doesn't matter. People are glued to their television to see what happens to Mr. Pop-Tart.
Okay, so it's the first time. It's like the equivalent of the first time someone goes, "What's up?" Or there's a frog that starts ribbiting, right? It's the first time. Is the bar now set? Are you going to tune in to the Pop-Tart Bowl next year? But is the bar now set where, oh, God, you know, the Pop-Tart better? You know, Pop-Tart should be recruiting that Oregon Duck kid.
Well, here's my thing. We've been talking all year about BYU Cougar or Oregon Duck. Who's the better mascot? Because they both had phenomenal years, both of those mascots. Okay. Lots of viral moments. And in the last hour, the upset of the year with the Pop-Tart guy, I think he jumped both of them. I mean, athletically, the BYU Cougar has him trumped.
Yeah.
Cosmo the Cougar. But Cosmo was not eaten by anybody.
The Oregon Duck kid, I think that was out there alone. I don't think anyone was giving him direction. Right? I mean, you know, some of the stuff he did probably wouldn't get past the corporate marketing masters, right? In terms of, you know, wasn't there some reference to, you know, some scene in Gossip Girl or something?
I don't know, but he certainly he's you're right. He was on a pretty loose leash over
But he was writing his own material.
I think so. Pop, I think you've got like a future SNL. I think that's what I think. Like students that aspire to be SNL writers, I think that they should have to be the mascot at their school.
Well, you know, Emory did a bit last year where they introduced a fake major. I think I talked about this. That fake major in terms of being a mascot. And my reaction was, hey, you know what? That Oregon Duck mascot, that Pop-Tart mascot, there's some real meaning to what those guys do in terms of the connections they can build.
Right.
It might be silly, but those connections are very, very look, I'm guessing if you're an Oregon student, the duck is one of the things you will be talking about 40 years from now. Even if you're graduating 2023, literally you might be talking about some of the stuff the Duck did in 2063.
Yeah. And my brother went to the Georgia Oregon game in Atlanta last year. Wow, that was just a year ago, or a little over a year ago. And all he could talk about, I mean, these were two top five, top 10 teams. All he could talk about for a week after that game was how hilarious it was watching the Oregon Duck run onto the field. That was his favorite part. I imagine there's a lot of six-year-olds that had the same takeaway. Brother is actually a 30-year-old, but nonetheless, it's age-diverse reach for that particular mascot. I think the BYU Cougar probably has the same effect. And the Pop-Tart, again, capture the hearts of America. It made me wish, Mike, that when they moved to this 12-team playoff, that every game had some silly sponsor and that it wasn't taken so seriously. I want to see the national champions eating out of a cereal bowl for the Fruit Loops national championship.
Okay. But here's the dilemma in all this. Here's the tough part. So then the Cheez-It bowl or Cheez-It, let me get this right. What is it? The Cheez-It?
To me, it's the Cheez-It bowl. The one with the guy in the Cheez-It costume.
I know, but you know, there's always these.
Like they kept the original bowl name and then they throw Cheez-It in the front.
Exactly. Sponsored by Cheez-Its. It's the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. Okay, so they got the name Cheez-It in front of citrus. And again, think about the way these deals are done. And there's legitimately probably a negotiation at some point where it's like, well, we want Cheez-It in front of citrus. Right. But that's probably going to cost a little bit more than the Citrus Bowl funded by Cheez-It. Now, the Cheez-It character, and look, we don't even know the mysteries of all this. Might have been the same guy that was in the Pop-Tart costume, right, Doug?
Whoa. That is, no one's seen him in the same place at the same time.
Now, the Cheez-It guy was calling out the Pop-Tart guy. So the Cheez-It guy is trying to create a rivalry with the Pop-Tart guy. They might both be the same guy, and they are both sponsored by the same organization. So this is the equivalent of Kellogg's owns the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers and is calling themselves out. Rivalries are important, but I don't know.
I think it's good marketing. I think like a musical parallel here. Sometimes you'll see like Drake and Kanye West get into some kind of public beef, right? And those guys, I don't think they're on the same record label, but I've seen it. I've seen instances like where there is some common denominator. So let's say they're on the same record label and they get into some kind of beef and it's public and they're saying stuff or making songs about each other or whatever. And then one of them releases their album and the other one decides to release their album the next week or the same day. And they have a kind of public competition to see who's going to get more streams, determine who wins this. And if you're the record label, that is a win because there's a lot of attention being drawn to that. And you're getting a lot more listenership across the board. And I think that I've been kind of like critical about those types of things because it seems kind of fake to me. And obviously with Cheez-Its, it is fake. Like there's no questioning that. But from an entertainment standpoint, I think that they're not taking themselves too seriously, that their brand voice has become, at least this bowl season, something very not self-serious, something very goofy, something that, you know, is playful. And I think that anything playful they can do with it is a win. And I think that they should market around it. Like, I think that they should be promoting, like, tailgating with Cheez-Its for that. Like, every fan of the team, like, you know, the more Cheez-Its you eat, the more likely you are to win kind of thing. Because I think that, you know, there is something there. And obviously, it got a lot of eyeballs, a lot of attention. But I think the likability kind of skyrocketed from everyone I've talked to or that's talked to me about it. And so it seems like as much a joke as Emery might be making about mascot major, there is power in mascots and in, you know, brand mascots as well as team mascots. And we've seen that this bowl season. And it's added a lot of fun to what can sometimes become a little bit too much of a profession in college football now with the current structure.
Well, I'll say this, you know, and it's interesting that Kellogg's is the company that went down this path because Kellogg's has, you know, they've got a lot of these brands where they have a mascot that's essentially personified the brand, right? Yeah. And so, you know, you got Snap Crackle and Pop, Tony the Tiger, right? These things, and look, the marketing used to have a lot of this kind of stuff. You know, there was, you know, Charlie the Tuna, Mr. Whipple for Charmin, right? Kind of building that person for the consumer or the fan to have a relationship with. Now, the one I want to bring up, because I think it's actually the new granddaddy, assuming this is a trend, the granddaddy of them all, in terms of this new age bowl phenomena, has got to be something that is a lot of fun, but it's also something that is absolutely disgusting to probably 30 to 50% of the population. And that's the Duke's Mayo Bowl.
I thought that's probably where you were going with that. Yeah. It's pretty disgusting. I went to an opening game in the season that was sponsored by Duke's, and they kept panning to, you know, people in the student section that were eating Duke's mayo out of a bowl like it was ice cream, but binge eating it very fast. They would cut to them on.
Can you imagine the brand manager at some point going, I got an idea.
Let's gross them out.
We love our product. We think, but a lot of people find our product repulsive. Let's lean into that.
See, I like it. Just own it. Own that. I'm trying to think. There's anytime there's like a food sponsored game, which I feel like is most of them, right?
They're all over the place. Here's Serve Pro, Quick Lane, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Easy Post, Hawaii Bowl, SRS. I love these things. SRS Distribution. You know, who knows what it is. Adventures Bowl, Famous Idaho Potato Bowl. So, I mean, hopefully.
I think that like the Potato Bowl, they should have a potato launcher. And the winning team gets to like shoot it into the crowd.
I would
shoot potatoes.
I would have about 30 versions of the potato mascot there.
It's there's a Myrtle Beach Bowl, Celebration Bowl, New Orleans. I feel like some of these are a little bit too generic. I almost feel like the more
Scooter's Coffee. How about this roofclaim.com bowl? I mean, I you know.
Military Bowl, Duke's Mayo, Texas Bowl. Like some of these are just, I think Pop-Tarts is probably my favorite. I'm going down the list right now. Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl's great.
There's Tax Act and Tax Slayer. So we got some competition there. They should, you know, figure out a way to make that more of a rivalry.
Coach, you just won the game. What are you going to do to celebrate? I'm going to go pay my taxes in 2 hours with TurboTax.com. I think there should always be some kind of like tie-in like that.
Well, and you know what? One of the things I love about all this as a straight marketing guy is I love the effort to hold on to the historical brand. Right? where it's made out like, oh, you know, we've got this historical thing that is part of the college football tradition. You know, it's something that has been built over generations. And I always think, you know, well, that's really kind of that's the Rose Bowl, right? The Rose Bowl isn't going to put, they're not going to put Pop-Tarts in front of Rose Bowl. But you know what they did do? It's the Rose Bowl game presented by Prudential.
Which is like a classy, it doesn't feel like it's diluting the brand of the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. And in parallel to that, it was the CFP semifinal at the All-State Sugar Bowl. So it's, you know, it's an irresistible. I think people have got to admit at this point that, you know, sports has become addicted to sponsorship dollars, or as I think they want to call them these days, partnerships. And so it's inevitable that these things have got to go down. I guess there is sort of a question of how do you do it? What is the right way to do it? Do you go all out? And just, you know, you got the Kellogg Bowls that are just having fun with it, the Duke Mayo Bowls. Do you try and preserve some of the tradition of the Rose Bowl? I'm not. And especially in this area, Doug, where the college football playoff is everything and the rest of it is just an ad platform. You know,
I'll take back what I said earlier about doing all the bowl games this way. Let's say, like, next year, the 12 – I guess the first couple of playoff games, those aren't even bowl games next year. They're like they play at a home stadium of one of the teams. But when you get into the, I guess, the top four, it becomes like the Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, whatever. I think they should keep those because it feels like there's some prestige there, you know. But for everything else, it's like the NIT now, you know. But they make it way more fun than the NIT. Like, as a Georgia fan, losing to Alabama was no fun. Not playing in the college football playoff was no fun. But having this bowl game where it was like, this game doesn't really matter. It's kind of an exhibition, but also it's a lot of fun. Like, our kids are having fun. Of course it wasn't as fun for the other team, but it's a lot of fun. It's football for the sake of football. That's bowl games, I think, at this point, that aren't playoff games. It's the NIT, but it's like, let's get silly. Let's, you know, the kids are going on vacation. They're going to the beach. They're going bowling. They're riding rides at Disneyland or Disney World. And so, like, let's just embrace the fun side of football and make it less of a professional product and more of like a Savannah Bananas product for these NIT type football games. And I think that works. I think it worked for me this year. I enjoyed the bowl season a lot more than I have in previous playoff years.
Well, Doug, here's a follow up question for you then. Okay, so you take 12 out. Do you take the remaining, I don't know, 16 or 24 teams that are sort of, you know, bowl eligible? Do you run a counter tournament, the NIT of football?
I mean, I think it could be fun. I think it could be fun. Florida State and Georgia would have had something to play for, maybe. I mean, as far as like the number of opt-outs in that game, wow. Oregon would have had a shot. You know, it would have been fun. I think that the match, it would have gotten us a lot of great matchups. Like, I think Georgia, all year I thought Georgia-Oregon were going to play in the playoff, and I thought it would have been a really fun game. You know, and it could have been. Liberty would have had a chance to upset a team like Florida State or a team like Georgia, you know, a big blue blood. Like, it would have been entertaining. People would have tuned in for that, I think.
Okay, so college football bowl games were, you know, Doug, I think the college football season was a lot of fun.
I enjoyed it. And, like, again, coming from a guy who's
well, let me just say, Deion Sanders in Colorado.
Yeah, it was.
I'm going to call this the ad platform bowl series to end the season. There was a lot of good college football has probably been more fun for me this year than the NFL. More compelling stories throughout the entire season.
It feels more fun. The NFL is a better it's better football, but for whatever reason, it's not as much fun. College has this level of unpredictability. And I was talking to someone about this yesterday because there's a lot of talk amongst Florida State fans, amongst probably Oregon fans, I know, like, firsthand Georgia fans that feel like we might have been the best team and we feel gypped, we feel robbed, we feel like we should have been in. And you start talking in what ifs, you know. Well, if we had all of our guys healthy, and we hear this every year from whoever doesn't win it. The bottom line with college sports, it's in single elimination formats, and it's the same with the NFL in the playoffs, but in single elimination formats, it's very rare that the best team wins. The team who has the best season wins the championship. That's what seven game formats do. That's what the World Series is really good at. That's what the NBA Finals is really good at, finding and allowing the best team to show that they are in fact the best team. With single elimination, there is a level of unpredictability that makes it fun, that makes it exciting, that makes it, you know, like Alabama really having a rough year by their standards and then beating Georgia, that was a thrill for them. And then for, you know, Michigan doing what they did, of course, Washington, another team, like, they were pretty much in elimination games with Oregon twice and won those. And then, I mean, having those elimination games pretty much every game when you're facing top teams adds a level of excitement and entertainment. And I think you just have to embrace it if you're a college football fan. You have to embrace that my team, the years that we win might not be the years where we're the best team, and the years where we might lose when we are the best team. I think there have been several. I think about my New York Giants winning the Super Bowl against the 17-0 Patriots. That team does not win a seven-game series. That team doesn't win a three-game series against the Patriots. But it was the most fun I've ever had watching sports. And I think that's what these single elimination tournament formats provide for fans. And again, I think that it is a very fun product. I think it was a great year for college football. And the narrative that college football is dying, I don't like a lot of things about the changes that are happening, but I think it's just changing because I think that the attention is still there and the excitement is still there. And it doesn't feel like that's going away, even though there's elements of the league structure that a lot of people aren't super excited about.
Doug, and that's where I wanted to go sort of as a second half of this. So a lot of fun, a lot of media fun, right? I mean, you know, like I said, Deion in Colorado, that was a great three-week story. I mean, it just was, right? These guys.
But we were talking playoff. We were talking about him leaving to go coach at Alabama.
They were going look, they were going 1-2 in the Heisman. They were, you know. But
yeah.
Look, I do think there are some significant cracks in college football. But college football is probably healthier than the vast majority of sports and professional sports at this point. Look, I'll give you one, and then let me sort of get into something else here. Yeah. If Deion Sanders is the coach of Florida State, I don't think Florida State gets left out of the college football playoff, because Deion Sanders has the ability to go sit with Stephen A. Smith for 3 weeks every morning blasting the selection committee. And so the reality of the power of the brands, and Deion is a brand, is something very real to all this. Okay. Now, what I want to say, okay, so again, you know, you alluded to some of it. A lot of these guys opting out for their NFL, the transfer portal starts to heat up instantly. And so NIL, the transfer portal, you know, the other story that, you know, sort of came out, and you sent me the link of these guys talking about it on ESPN, of Milroe's NIL brand of Lank. And let a naysayer, and again, no, this is what I'm saying, why I need an audio guy, let a naysayer know, because immediately that is every comment on Twitter. Okay, so two things happen immediately. Pat McAfee just starts laughing, and as he starts laughing or starts investigating, the other guys on the panel start laughing. Every comment on social media is talking about naysayer versus naysayer and the hard R. And so, I mean, it's like, the great thing is we now have a kind of a marketing NIL story that you need precise audio to discuss. I'm sort of shocked about in terms of all of this. And look, I was close to ordering a Lank mug just for the, I didn't show up. Was that this is going down at Alabama? Because if I'm Coach Saban, man, I don't want to get anywhere near this kind of thing.
No. And you look back at Justin Fields at Georgia, and when he left and claimed racism as a reason for leaving, was granted a hardship waiver by the NCAA. Those states obviously have their stereotypes, and anything that might reinforce them or create the perception of culture that within or surrounding the football program is really, really risky. I mean, you're skating on thin ice. and to be frank, Mike, after that game, I saw some things on social media, comments about that particular player. Some of it was fun and lighthearted and kind of, you know, like Alabama's going to be linked number four after this, or they're going to be linked behind Georgia, or the center was the weak link on the team. So lots of link puns, but it did open the door for some discussions surrounding that particular player by fans who weren't happy with him. And, you know, it's not a good thing. If I'm the football coach, I want to steer away from that in any way that I can.
So this is where we're going to go. Like the idea of what I also see, that DJ Ugalele is trans.
Ugalele.
Yeah, sorry. You know, I will fully admit to being name challenged. And it's always one of the things that scares me the most.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Whenever we talk about the center for the Milwaukee Bucks, right, I just say Giannis.
Giannis.
But I think this is an important story in terms of, you know, we've had NIL shifting where people were going to go coinciding with the transfer portal, but we're now going to start developing controversial brands is, again, going to take this to somewhere else. And it's, and again, college football has been a lot of fun this year, but there's some frightening stuff if you're looking at the industry in terms of the ability for players to, for things to just sort of run amok. But like I said, you know, like I think for me, Doug, college sports was the best product on the field and on the TV this past year. It was the winner. And I'm saying this as a fan of a team that is barely competitive, and his future prospects in Illinois do not look particularly solid given that how the landscape keeps changing. But yeah, a lot of fun, but God, some big question marks.
Yeah, and we can have another discussion future weeks, but I feel like that Big Ten versus SEC rivalry gained some steam this year going into the mega conference season, you know, first inaugural one next year. Bama losing to Michigan, and then Washington making the college football playoff finale over Texas. So that was two Big Ten, future Big Ten teams over future SEC teams.
Doug.
And I've seen a lot of chatter about, the SEC's overrated.
Yeah. Okay. Short one this week. As always, more content at fandomanalytics.com. Thank you.